I asked Matt to lead that song before our study this morning. I thought it went very well with what I want to talk about with protecting our reputation. This is something that the elders have asked that I address in some way a few weeks ago, and so I'm glad to do this, and I think it goes very well with what we've studied this morning and walking in the fear of the Lord and avoiding those paths that are evil, those paths that are wrong, because it has a negative impact in so many ways, and one of those being our reputation and our influence. I appreciate, Matt, very much you leading that song, and the two that were led before it are songs that I especially enjoy. Lead me to some soul today. Think about so many of my loved ones who, with verse 4, open hearts of those I love to hear and heed the gospel call. I think about so many of my relatives when we sing that song. And can it be that we sang before we partook the Lord's Supper? I don't know if there's a better song that helps to prepare my mind to think about the sacrifice that the Lord made for us, that God would create us and then die for us. What better thing for us to do in return than to live for Him? And in doing that, we have, or we can make for ourselves, a good reputation. Solomon writes in the 22nd Psalm, verse 1, "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold." In a world that puts the emphasis upon the riches and upon the silver and gold and do whatever you have to get that, the Scriptures tell us just the opposite should be our focus. We should have that good name. A reputation refers to one's overall qualities as judged by people in general, the estimation in which one is held. I've heard many people say or comment or respond, "Don't judge me. You can't judge me. And only God can judge me." And that is said, and that's very popular. But when you talk about your reputation, you are talking about the judgments that others make about you. And our reputation is very valuable. We may not think much of it, but God says it's to be chosen over great riches. Good reputation is one of the highest prizes that we can possess. It reflects the truth that people have examined our life, have seen our experiences, and have found us to be people of character, people who can be trusted. A good reputation cannot be purchased with money, and it cannot be demanded from others. It can only be earned. It is not a right that is given to us because we have been born or because we are Americans or because we call ourselves Christians, but it is a gift. It is a gift that is bestowed upon us by honest people around about us who have seen the life that we have lived. Jesus talked about the importance of our reputation. He talked about the importance of our influence when He likened His disciples unto salt and light. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Salt and light. Why these two substances? Because both of them have a powerful influence. Salt can enhance the flavor of food. It can act as a preservative. And on a day like today, we can scatter some of it on the walkway and the driveway, and it melts away the snow. And you can go on and on looking at the properties of salt and how salt is able to do a number of things. Light is so important. Light can dispel the darkness. Light can make us aware of dangers that are around about us. Light can show the way. When Jesus likens you and me to salt and light, He is talking about the influence that we are to have upon people in this world.
A good reputation will equip a disciple of Christ with influence and with opportunity to do much good for the cause of Christ. But what I want us to understand and to appreciate this morning is the fact that our reputation must be maintained. It must be guarded. It must be protected. Jesus says here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, that if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It's then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. Luke's account of this teaching, which I believe was done on a different occasion by the Lord, he taught these same things different times as he was preaching through Galilee. In Luke chapter 14, verses 34 and 35, Jesus says, "Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." See, this salt, the salt that we put on our food, the salt that we would use to de-ice the driveway, even if it loses its quality of taste and it becomes something that is not of value to us, we can't throw it out in the yard. That salt that would clear the ice, that would melt the ice, if it was to get off into the lawn and come this spring, the grass wouldn't grow there. It would still kill. It would kill the vegetation. Even if it's lost other properties, it's dangerous to throw out on the land. And it's dangerous to put in the compost pile, because that eventually is going to be put into the soil and it'll kill whatever you're trying to grow. The only thing you can do with it is what's said in Matthew chapter 5, just throw it out in the street where you don't want anything to grow, where people can walk on it. And what he's telling you and I when he says that, he's talking about the importance of maintaining our influence, because once our reputation is lost, it's not easily regained, if ever. We need to understand, like Nehemiah did. If you would turn back with me to Nehemiah chapter 6, here is a man who knew he had an important job to do, and he was opposed at every turn. He went back to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall around that city. And the enemies of Jerusalem didn't want that wall built. They liked them being defenseless. And so they began to work against Nehemiah. They began to threaten him. And when that didn't intimidate him, then they invited him to come out to a place where they could meet and they could talk. And Nehemiah refused because he knew he was going to be ambushed and killed. And here, on this occasion, Nehemiah chapter 6, it turns out that the enemies of Nehemiah have gotten to one of his advisors, have gotten to a man in Jerusalem who was recognized as a prophet, and they've paid him off to try to set Nehemiah up. Nehemiah goes into this man in verse 10, and we find out that he was a secret informer. And he says to Nehemiah, he says, "Let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. Indeed, at night they will come to kill you." Look at how Nehemiah responded. "And I said, should such a man as I flee? And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in." He realized that this was a setup. And it would have damaged his character, and it would have caused him to lose his influence with the people, and it would have no doubt halted the work on rebuilding the wall around the city of Jerusalem. Number one, he was not a Levite. He was not a priest. He wasn't allowed to go into that part of the temple that he was being suggested to go into. And if he'd gone in there, he would have lost that favor and that respect with the people. Secondly, what kind of a leader would he be if, upon the first report of an ambush, he ran in there to hide like a coward? Now, that's what they were hoping he would do, but he realized he couldn't do that. You read on, verses 12 and 13, "Then I perceived that God had not sent him at all, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this reason he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way and sin, so that they might have a cause for an evil report, that they might reproach me." Nehemiah refused. Why? because he knew what it would do to his character. He knew what it would do to his reputation and his influence. And he was very careful to protect that, because the work that he was doing was vitally important. Why are God's servants careful to protect their reputation? Why should we be like Nehemiah? Why should we guard our reputation and protect it in that way? Well, we need to realize, as Nehemiah did, we need to realize that there's something more important than just ourselves. The important thing is the reputation of God and the effectiveness of His work. That's the most important thing. That was true in Nehemiah's day. It was true when Jesus was preaching in Galilee, and it's just as true today. Every Christian is a walking 24-hour advertisement for the Lord, for the gospel of Jesus Christ, and for the local church of which we've identified ourselves as members. Now, I ask you this morning, that being the case, what kind of message are you and I sending to the people around about us? Are we careful with our reputation, knowing that we are being watched, knowing that we are the Bible that most people are reading? They don't open up this book, but they examine our lives. Now, what are they seeing in you and me? What kind of message are we sending about our God and how much faith we really have in Him? What kind of message are we sending about the gospel and the trust that we have placed in it to save our souls and to guide our life? What message are we sending about the Knollwood Church of Christ and the things that we say about the church and about the members of the church to people around about us? I want us to consider some areas in which you and I need to give specific attention to make sure that we are protecting and maintaining our reputation. Number one, let's consider our actions. Let's consider the things that we do, the things that people around about us see us doing, because we are the Bible that they are reading. What are we saying in our actions? You know, the people of God are expected to act in a certain way. And so for us to protect our reputation and our influence, it's important that we avoid some things, that we not be found in some places. In 1 Thessalonians 5:21 and 22, we are to test all things, hold fast to what is good, and abstain from every form of evil. And to abstain means you don't have anything to do with it. Abstain doesn't mean you dabble in it just a little bit and practice moderation. Abstain doesn't even mean that you get right up to the line and see how close you can get without falling over. Abstain means you stay away from it. Those things that are evil, those places where evil things are done, may we never be found there. In the book of 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 19, an important passage regarding our conduct, 2 Timothy at chapter 2 and verse 19. Paul writes and says, "Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal, the Lord knows those who are His, and let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity." God knows those who are His. And if you and I are claiming to be His, if you and I are calling ourselves after the name of Christ, and that's what we're doing when we say, "I'm a Christian," if we're going to call ourselves after the name of Christ, we are to depart from iniquity. Not to meddle in it, not to practice it in moderation, not to get as close to it as we can without falling over. We're to depart from it. That's what the world should see in us. Should see that we are distancing ourselves from those things that are sinful, not participating in them. In the book of 1 Peter, at chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, the Apostle Peter says that whatever time we spent before we became a Christian, that was more than enough time for us to be involved in sin. But now that we're Christians, we cannot do that anymore. Verses 1 through 4, "Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind." Let's have the mind of Christ. The same mind as His. What was His mind? For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lust of men, but for the will of God. Now that we've become a Christian, we've got a different perspective on life. We have a different thing that guides us. We have a different path that we're going to walk on. Before we became a Christian, we lived how we wanted to. Now that we've become a Christian, we live like Christ lived. We live for the will of God. And that means there's going to have to be a change in our behavior. That we can't do the things that we might have done before. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles. When we walked in lewdness, lust, lewdness or lasciviousness would be fulfilling sensual desires, sexual desires. We've had enough of that. We can't do that anymore. Or living after any kind of lust. We can't pursue that any longer. The next three words have to do with the consumption of alcohol, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties. That's enough of that. Drunkenness, that is a sin, most obviously. It's a work of the flesh, condemned in Galatians chapter 5. But what about the revelry here? The revelry would be a drinking party. It'd be the equivalent of a keg party, where people are getting together and they're consuming alcohol in excess and getting drunk and everything that goes along with that. That's enough of that. Well, can I just go if I don't drink? No, you don't do that anymore. You're not to be found there anymore. How about drinking parties? That would be the social drinking. That's where people would get together and imbibe alcohol at a moderate level. Not in excess, but they would get together and that'd be the social drinking. Not anymore. Not anymore. You don't do that now that you've become a Christian. The abominable idolatries at the end of verse 3, that would be all the sins that would accompany idolatry. Not just idol worship, but that would be the drinking, the drunkenness, the drug use, the overindulgence. That would be the fornication that would take place there. All those things that would accompany the worship of idols, they're to do it no more. Verse 4, such a change has to have taken place in your life regarding these practices. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. But yet, when we as Christians are found doing these things, verse 4 can't happen. Because we're involved in these things, we're engaged in these things that the world ought to see we no longer do. We don't do those things any longer. But when we call ourselves after the name of Christ, and we're found involved in sinful activities, you know what that's called? That's called hypocrisy. We're claiming one thing and we're living another way. And our reputation is gone. Our influence for good is gone. So if we're going to protect our reputation, then we've got to be very careful, little feet, where they take us to. That song, be careful, little feet, where you go. We have to be careful where we go. We have to be careful about the things that we do. We also have to give attention to our words. Watching the words that we say is so very important because our mouth, our tongue, is a ready and willing vehicle to reveal what is truly in our heart. It will be revealed through our words much more quickly than through any of our actions. Our words have power because they reveal what is in our heart. Matthew chapter 12, and at verse 34, Jesus says, "Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things." Our words reveal what's in our heart, so we need to be very careful about the words that we say and the kind of things that we engage in. But even more than that, we need to go much deeper to the heart and root those things out of our heart. We need to change it from within. And then we won't have problems with engaging in sins of the tongue. Paul talks about a number of them in Ephesians chapter 4, going into chapter 5. He condemns lying. Now that we are a Christian, we can't lie. Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. You call yourself a Christian, but yet you get caught in lies all the time, telling lies. You're not acting like a Christian. There goes your reputation. What about using bad language? Verse 21, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. What kind of language are you using? Is that allowing you to live up to your claim to be a Christian? Over the holiday season, Christy and I were in the mall. We were walking around in the mall and went by one store, and on a mannequin in the window in that store was a T-shirt that said in big letters across the top, I love Jesus. But then down below it, in much finer cursive writing, is, but I like to cuss a little. Well, which is it? Do you love Jesus, or do you like to use filthy language? The two are not compatible. They don't go together. Someone might say, well, yes, they do. So many people do it. The Scriptures say they don't go together. And when we claim that we're one thing and we talk like something else, we're a hypocrite. And there goes our reputation. What about telling filthy stories and dirty jokes? Chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, but fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints, neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. What about gossip and slander? So many passages in the New Testament condemn being one who is a backbiter, one who is telling stories behind others' backs, one who is a gossip or a talebearer. That's the word I was looking for. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 16 condemns this. Do not go about among your people as a talebearer. The importance of maintaining godly speech is shown in the fact that people are expecting Christians to talk in a certain manner, and we need to be consistent. James, in his excellent address of the sins of the tongue, James chapter 3, talks about this. But no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. The mouth that confesses Christ, the mouth that sings praises unto God, ought not to be the same mouth that lies and cusses and tells filthy stories and gossip. No more than you should go to a spring out in nature and find it giving fresh water and brackish water at the same time. Or go to a fruit tree that's giving different kinds of fruit. That's against nature. That's against what we expect. That's the point James goes on to make. Yet how inconsistent are we with the use of our words? We want to maintain our reputation. We need to take this very seriously. Whenever Peter was trying to hide his identity out in the courtyard of the high priest as Jesus was being tried, there he was denying his Lord three times, as Jesus said he would. And the second time that he was asked, there were those who came up to him and said, surely you're one of his disciples. You're a Galilean. Your speech betrays you. His accent, his dialect, he showed that he was from Galilee. He wasn't one of the city dwellers there in Jerusalem. He was up from up north, up in the hill country in Galilee. That's where Jesus was from. And apparently they talked different up there, kind of like we do in our country. You can tell when someone's from a different part of the country. Your speech betrays you. His speech betrayed him. When we are talking like the world, we're betraying ourselves. And we're not a citizen of heaven. No, we belong right here. Because we talk just like everybody else. And our reputation, it's gone. We need to do like David. We need to pray like he did in Psalm 141, verse 3. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Be careful, little mouth, what you say. We need to guard our reputation. What about our companions? What about the people that we choose to spend the most time with? Now, this is an area where Christians can have a real challenge. How are we to influence the world without being influenced by the world? In order for salt to work, it's got to come into contact with the substance. You've got to put it on your food. You've got to put it on the driveway. You've got to put it on whatever it is you want to preserve. It can't do its work until it comes into contact with it. Now, how can you and I exercise an influence over the world, get close enough to contact it in that way without being influenced by the world? Now, that's the challenge for every Christian. And some react in extremes that show that they're not understanding the fact that it can be done. Some say, well, what does it matter? What does it matter? I'm going to just dive into the world and God will protect me. Others say, no, I've got to stay away from everyone and go lock themselves up. Lock themselves up and isolate themselves from the world. Well, neither one of those approaches are correct. That's not what the Lord had in mind. The Scriptures teach that we can have company with sinful people. Now listen to me very carefully and go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, the church in Corinth is being condemned, rebuked, because they are tolerating a man who is living in fornication. And what they needed to do was to exercise discipline, to withdraw from him, to deliver him to Satan, to get him out of their midst. Now, Paul goes on to say in verse 9, 1 Corinthians 5, verse 9, he says, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. Yet I certainly did not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. If that's the rule, and you can't ever have any contact with anyone in the world that's involved in sin, you'd better leave the world. Because you're not going to find anyone that isn't involved in some kind of sin. What I told you, I've written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral or covetous or an idolater or a drunkard or an extortioner, not even to eat with such a person. But regarding those in the world, yes, you can have company with them. Jesus was criticized by the leaders of the Jews because he and his disciples ate and drank with sinners. And Jesus responded to this criticism by saying that I have come to call the sinners and not the righteous to repentance. And that tells us that the association that Jesus had with these people who were sinners was not to hang around with them and pat them on the back and give the impression that he condoned of their life and that he approved of it, and he endorsed it, and left them with the impression that everything was okay. He used the opportunity that he had to be with them, to influence them to repent, to do what was right, to call them to repentance. So, as Christians, we can have company with people in the world, but we need to make use of that association in the right way. We need to use it as an opportunity to teach, as an opportunity to let our light shine, to be a good influence, and to call upon people to do what is right. But we are never, under any circumstance, allowed to have fellowship with them, that is, to participate in their sin, or to leave the impression that we're okay with their sin, or to give the impression that we condone it, much less to join them in it. Ephesians chapter 5 and at verse 11, we're to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. The Scriptures repeatedly warn of the dangers of bad influences. In the New American Standard Version, 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Now, good people can have an influence, a positive influence, over those who are evil. But if you're around bad company long enough, it's going to do what it does. It corrupts. Bad company corrupts good morals. So you may want to think about how much time you're spending around these individuals. Proverbs 13, verse 20, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." See, we hope to have a good influence upon others, but what the Bible tells us is, make no mistake about it, they're going to have an influence on you too. So who are you choosing to spend time with? Who are you spending the most time with? Is it someone that's going to help you or someone that's going to hurt you? We need to be careful of that. Jesus may have eaten with sinners, but tell me, who were His closest associates? Who were the people that Jesus surrounded Himself with in the closest way possible? Were they the rank and file sinners of Israel? No. They were His disciples, the men and women who were looking to go to heaven, who were looking to serve the Lord. That's who Jesus surrounded Himself with. That was His close circle of associates. Who's yours? People of the Lord or people of the world? Whose company and companionship do you prefer? Who's logging in the most hours of influence over you? Is it God's people or Satan's people? Who is it? We have to protect our reputation. Be careful who you spend your time with. One more thing I want to address, and the elders wanted this addressed specifically, and that is our participation on social media. We are well into the computer age. The majority of people, I believe, are. There are some holdouts. But many of us have a presence on the internet. Many of us do this by participating in social media. Social media has its advantages and its benefits. It allows us to get in touch with people that we've lost touch with. It allows us to stay in touch with loved ones that we're physically separated from in a way that's better than anything that's come before it. There are some advantages to the social media sites, but there are also a lot of dangers. Not just dangers that would be brought up in a physical or a criminal environment or consideration, but spiritual as well. What's alarming to me is how many Christians post and like and forward ungodly things. And it's so very disappointing and discouraging. How many times you can go to their sites and see pictures of immodest dress and comments that encourage that and show that is endorsed, or mixed swimming or dancing, pictures before the dance or pictures at the dance, drug and alcohol use and abuse. I've seen Christians proudly holding up their can of beer. I've seen Christians toasting, holding up their glass of wine or champagne, posting it on Facebook or on other sites for the whole world to see. Well, you don't know what's really in that cup, but I know what's implied by it. Why would you send that message? Why would you do it? Movies that have sinful, obvious sinful content encouraged by social media. That's where we're at. That's where we're going. That's what we've seen. Homosexuality. The sin of homosexuality, not only endorsing or liking those things that endorse homosexuality, sometimes Christians are even seen bragging on their relatives who are homosexuals, showing clearly their preference. Their preference is to endorse the sinful lifestyle and not to stand up for what is right, what is true. Bad language being used, the emojis that would be used, OMG, and all the others that we could look at that indicate using God's name in vain or using curse words, four-letter words, these things being used, being liked. What are you liking? What are you clicking on? What are you sharing? I know for a fact there are some things that can be shared that as you're looking at them on the website, there are no cuss words, but when you tag it to your news feed for everyone to see, the cuss words show up. There was a gospel preacher that had a post like that he shared on his Facebook page a number of years ago. And I contacted him, and others did. Did you mean to share this? Did you mean to post this? Do you know that there's cuss words in it? And he didn't. He read through it. They weren't there until he posted it. When he posted it, it was there on his site. We have to be careful of the things that we're sharing. Because when we do, we're giving our endorsement to that. It's connected with us. It's connected with our name. It has to do with our reputation. We need to be very careful. The religious doctrine that we are endorsing, that we are liking. There are times that I've seen brethren, and I don't have anyone here in mind, I'm talking about much larger, wider scope, I've seen brethren tag things, post things, share things on their Facebook feed that teaches Calvinism, teaches false doctrine. Now, it's good that it's talking about the Bible. I guess that's good in a way, but if it's teaching false doctrine, you want to be associated with that. You want to be held responsible by God for forwarding that on for others to see, encouraging people to read books written by denominational authors that teach religious error. We need to be very careful what we click, because it says something about us. It says something about our reputation. I was doing some study, looking at some things, and came across these guidelines. And it was help young people. Guidelines for young people who post pictures and comments on social media. Number one, the first question you ask yourself before you hit click, before you post it, before you put that picture up there, would you be comfortable with a future boss or the principal of your school seeing this? Is that something that you would like to be seen by a much wider audience than you're intending when you go and you hit click? Because guess what? People are going to find it. Nowadays, when you apply for a job, you send in your resume, you fill out the application, you know what a lot of employers do? They go straight to social media to find you and see what you're all about. And to see if your profile on social media goes along with what you've said and what the references you've put down say about your character. People are going to see it. People that you don't expect, you don't even think about today. People are going to see it. You want people to see that? Really want them to see that? It'd be all right if your grandma saw it. I mean, that's a question that was put up there, but I think it's a good one. Would you like your parents, your grandparents to know that you like that? That you've been engaged in that? That you went to a party and got liquored up? You've got the picture on there as proud as can be. You want grandma seeing that? Here's a good question. Can someone that doesn't like you use it against you? Have you thought about that? Someone that doesn't like the fact that you're a Christian is looking to tear you down, and you get involved in something and you post it or you like it or you share it. Aha! He's a hypocrite. I knew it all along. Are you giving ammo to those who are looking to destroy your reputation? Think about these things before you hit like. Before you hit share, before you post it. But you know, I'm talking to Christians this morning. Would you be comfortable with God seeing it? Because you know what? He does. Even if you didn't get a picture of it, He saw it. God sees it. Will the post, if you post this, if you like this, if you share this, will it make it more difficult to convince people that you're a follower of Christ? Have you thought about that? What's that doing to your reputation? Is it helping you? Or is it going to hinder you to be an influence for good? And will the post make it more difficult to convince people to become a follower of Christ? How many Christians have dulled their sword and have ruined the flavor of their salt with just a few clicks and just a few posts? we have to protect our reputation. We could look at other areas, but if we can get a handle on these, we'll come a long way, won't we? We'll come a long way in protecting our reputation. Our reputation is a precious gift that God has given us that has great potential. Great potential to influence others for the cause of Christ. What I hope we've seen today is that we have to be careful to use our reputation in the proper way, and we have to be careful that we protect it and maintain it. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. That means you pay attention to, you understand, and you make the proper application of the Lord's warning about that salt losing its flavor and not being good for anything anymore. And let you and I have that constantly in the forefront of our mind as we are standing on life's highway and deciding which way we're going to go. As we're faced with a decision, are we going to do what God would have us to do, or are we going to yield to the temptation this one time and to do something the world would have us to do? Are we going to let our light shine? Or is our speech going to give us away? Brethren, our reputation is powerful and it's important, and let's make sure we protect it at all costs. If you're here and you're not yet a Christian, not yet a child of God, you need to become one. If you've got a good reputation, that's great. That's great, but that's not going to save you of your sins. That's not going to get you into heaven. You need to become a child of God. You believe Jesus is the Son of God? If so, then act on that belief by repenting of your sins, confessing your faith, and let us baptize you into Christ for the forgiveness of those sins. If you've done that, but you've become unfaithful, maybe even to the extent that it's hurt your reputation, you realize that, and you need to do something about that publicly, we'd be glad to help you. We'd be glad to pray for you. Whatever your need is, would you let it be made known by coming forward as we stand and sing this song? Please come.